The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. You and I were just, discussing off the air about this story from Pennsylvania, the long-awaited state grand jury report into sexual abuse. Six different Pennsylvania dioceses, including Pittsburgh and Greensburg, Pennsylvania, this coming from KDKA-TV, has finally been released.
884 pages.
2 years in the making. As the Attorney General said today, the most comprehensive report on child sexual abuse within the church ever produced in our country was released. Pennsylvanians can now finally learn the extent of sexual abuse at the dioceses. For the first time, we can all begin to understand the systematic cover-up by church leaders that followed. The abuse scarred every diocese. The cover-up was sophisticated. The church protected the institution at all costs, end of quote. This goes back seven decades.
Yeah.
The report cites 301 priests, clergy, and lay teachers with credible allegations against them. 99 in the Diocese of Pittsburgh alone. Of those 99, a group of four groomed and violently sexually assaulted young boys, said Shapiro. This next quote is quite disturbing, just so you know, but I believe it needs to be read. Quote, one boy was forced to stand on a bed in a rectory, strip naked, and pose as Christ on the cross for the priests. They took photos of their victim, adding them to the collection of child pornography, which they produced and shared on church grounds, end of quote. Shapiro said the priests would mark their victims by giving them gifts. To make it easier to target their victims, the priests gave their favored boys gift gold crosses to wear as necklaces. The crosses were markings of which boys had been groomed for abuse, end of quote. The report has been redacted, and the Attorney General not satisfied with the release of the redacted report.
Just amazing if you look at the charges here that this report brings about, and what it spells out. The behavior is disturbing, and just as disturbing is what the grand jury says was the massive and very sophisticated cover-up. You know, these victims go on and deal with this their entire lives. It is something that you can't undo. And to, you know, for this to, you know, this report goes back, as you mentioned, goes back seven decades. And you think about all the lives that were destroyed. While many of them may have had a productive life seemingly on the outside, on the inside they were, I'm certain, going through torture. And have been since being victimized.
The report states, and this is a quote, all victims were brushed aside. All victims. In every part of the state by church leaders who preferred to protect the abusers and their institutions above all. The main thing was not to help the children, but to avoid scandal. priests were raping little boys and girls, and the men of God who were responsible for them not only did nothing, they hid it all. Administrators, including bishops, had knowledge of this conduct, and as priests were regularly placed in ministry after the diocese was on notice that a complaint of child sexual abuse had been made. This conduct enabled offenders and endangered the welfare of children, end of quote. Mm. I mean, it's just, you think about it, how, you know, reprehensible it is. Mm. Being Catholic myself, being that as a young teenage boy, myself and other young teenage boys had an extremely close relationship with one of the priests of our parish, that when he passed away a few years ago, I made mention of it. Mm-hmm. It was also during the, you know, the police abuse, or police, the priest abuse scandals, which have been going on for, you know, 15 years now. This has been a topic of discussion. This goes back maybe 5-6 years ago that I mentioned him, because I said the, what has been destroyed is the innocence and the purity of the priests out there, and particularly the priest in my life that was such a huge influence, positive influence, not only on me, but all the other boys. And every time I tell the story, I said, wow, people are going to hear that and say, wow, something was weird. That's what bothers me the most. Hmm. Father Gill, who took myself, and a lot of us were in Boy Scouts, but he had a farm, a farm in the middle of nowhere. And this Catholic priest took all young teenage boys, 10, 11, 12, 13 years of age, to his farm alone. Mm-hmm. Nothing was strange about it. Nothing ever happened, except great positive experiences. It's where I learned to drive a tractor. It's where I learned to, you know, to drive a manual transmission. Now, I will tell you this. In order to have the good time, the only thing that we really had against this fine Catholic priest is because he brought us out there and paid for the food, he made us work around his house and his farm.
And he gave you the gift of work.
He gave us the gift of work, right. And we loved every single minute of it. And I think about, those are some of the most memorable moments outside of my immediate family, of my childhood and my teenage years. I remember where I was when Apollo 11 took off. Mm-hmm. I was at Father Gill's farm. We were watching it on TV. So it was, and we went there. I'll never forget one Christmas. It wasn't Christmas. It was, I believe it was right after Christmas. We went there until New Year's, and we actually celebrated. You know, he had church and everything for Christmas, and afterwards he had a few days off, and we went with him to the farm and to his sisters, and actually there were 4 or 5 teenage boys celebrating with him and his sister and his immediate family, Christmas. Mm-hmm. Great memories. A sense of community that was built by the church and by Father Gill.
Right.
And I will admit that when it all came down recently in Buffalo, New York, because the same thing's going on there. All these names of dozens upon dozens of priests over the last 50 years that were released, going down through the list. Mm. The thought goes through your head, please don't be on this list.
Right. Yeah.
And I hated the fact that that thought ever went through my mind. Not because of anything that he did, but because this scandal has been gone on for so long and has been hidden so long by the Catholic Church, that I doubted, you know, I didn't doubt, But for a moment, you know, the millisecond of doubt of, okay, maybe I was fine and everybody else was, but the fact that that thought went through my head just for a millisecond, I hated every moment of myself having that thought.
I mean, that in and of itself, as short-lived as it is tainting that relationship and those positive lessons.
Yes.
And it also breaks down a level of trust that many people would otherwise have, not just in their church leaders, but in the church itself.
Absolutely.
And I can't imagine anything as...
It taints all the good and all the innocence and purity of people that do exist every day within the Catholic Church.
Yes.
And it will take more than decades, probably, for that the stench of that memory to go away, you know, in the Catholic Church. Mm. And that isn't even close to being as horrific as what the victims of these priests had to go through.
Yeah. I mean, these are lives, again, that are destroyed. Forever.
Forever.
They live with that torture in their mind.
Every day.
Every single day. It never leaves. It never goes away. It can't be undone. Just horrific.
No, it can't.
Just horrific. Just can't.
And, you know, it's look, it's positive that it's all coming out. I mean, that is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because at least the transparency and the truth come out. And look, and whether we're talking about Washington, D.C. and what's going on there, or you know, the sexual abuse on the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing before you get anywhere is to get the truth out and the transparency out.
Right.
You get transparency, get the truth out. And at least that is coming out.
Yeah. Where you go from here, I don't know. This report, again, as you mentioned, this has been going on for a number of years now, but this report brings details, which is why you felt it was important to read the one quote from the report about some of the treatment and victims. It is
you have to know the evil that exists. That's why
if you're going to find out the truth is often very ugly. This is about as evil as it can get. The intent of these individuals who committed these heinous acts and the repeated offenses and the very sophisticated way that, according to the report, they set up the cover up and essentially marked their victims that had been groomed. It's about as heartbreaking and disgusting as you can imagine.
From men that we in our culture and in our faith are supposed to be able to trust with integrity and honesty and goodness of soul more than almost anybody else out there outside of our immediate family.
Right. Well, I mean, that is the outside of the home, that is the spiritual leader.
Yes. And that's what's so upsetting. That is just, you know, you read that and you're just like, how does a human being do that?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how they do it and how it becomes systematic, as it seemingly did, according to this report. And then beyond that, a systematic and very sophisticated cover-up.
Well, as you said many times, whether it's the, you know, was the Boy Scouts or this, when it comes to pedophiles,
mm-hmm.
It's where they believe they can hide the best.
Well, these predators know that there's going to be a level of trust that is given to them in certain scenarios. So what do you do? Because these predators have one thing in mind, to prey on children. This is the only thing, that's their only goal. So how do you facilitate that? Well, you get into a position of authority and trust. And that's how it happens. The cover-up is on the church.
Well, that's a whole different ballgame, as you
yep.
said, just as bad. How do you, in good conscience, ever cover it up? And how do you get a conspiracy of cover-up for such an evil and heinous crime?
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tires are one of the largest operating costs for owner-operators and fleets alike, but retreading gives you the opportunity to reuse your existing or old tires and save money. The cost of a retreaded tire can be anywhere from 30 to 50% less than the cost of a new tire, but in order to retread your tires, they must be properly maintained. It's important to pull your tires before any wires become exposed. As soon as any wires are exposed, your tires are unprotected from harsh environmental chemicals which can damage the casing and place it out of service, resulting in an expensive loss. Pulling your tires before any wires are exposed will help maintain the integrity of the tires, allowing for multiple retreads and saving you money.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. You had one of the colonels, Cardinal World, by the way, who responded to the allegations in a statement saying, as I have made clear throughout my more than 30 years as a bishop, the sexual abuse by some members of the Catholic Church is a terrible tragedy, and the church can never express enough of our deep sorrow and contrition for the abuse and the failure to respond promptly and completely. While I understand this report may be critical of some of my actions, I believe the report confirms that I acted with diligence and concern for the victims. The Archdiocese of Washington, which Cardinal Rule now leads, disputes some of the reports. In a statement, they say in part, the document referenced by the report contains the handwritten phrase "circle of secrecy." However, the handwriting does not belong to then Bishop Worrell, as the writers of the report mistakenly assumed, and neither Cardinal confirmed the handwriting is not his, and confirmed that neither he nor wrote nor used the phrase while serving as Bishop of Pittsburgh. When the Cardinal's legal counsel informed the Pennsylvania Attorney General about the error prior to the release of the report, the Attorney General and his senior deputy refused to acknowledge the mistake and refused to take any steps to correct the dramatic use and misattribution of the phrase in the report. So I just want to make sure that we told you what the grand jury report and the prosecution is saying. It's only fair to state what the cardinal, who was bishop at the time, what he stated.
Sure.
And I don't know specifically, you know, the grand jury report, a lot of the names have been redacted, but even the cardinal is not at all stating that what is in the grand jury report, in essence, except for his particular knowledge, not denying anything actually in the report and what the allegations were and the actual cover-up. Not
right.
denying the cover-up,
right.
not denying the allegations of sexual abuse.
Right.
undeniably irrefutable. Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Hi, thanks for being here this morning. A Washington state judge has dismissed a lawsuit filed by young activists who argued the state is violating their rights by failing to protect them from climate change. In his ruling Tuesday, King County Superior Court Judge Michael Scott says the issues in the case are political questions that must be addressed by the legislative and executive branches and cannot be resolved by a court. The young activists sued the state, the governor, and state agencies in February, asserting a constitutional right to a healthy environment and a stable climate system.
I don't remember that part of the Constitution. Do you?
It's right after free stuff.
Oh, yeah. I should have kept reading.
Judge Scott wrote that there is not such a specific right to a healthy environment or a stable climate system in the state constitution.
Oh, see, that's when... He actually had to point out. Yeah, what you're claiming doesn't exist. Wow.
Hey, I'm telling you, I told you yesterday was one of those rare days. One of those rare days. Happens once every 5 or 6 months where I see somebody post something on Facebook and I go, ah! Mm-hmm. And it was somebody posting again how the NFL players' rights have been violated, their First Amendment rights.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I just, you know, went back and forth with this, and it just doesn't get it. Well, no, because the NFL said they could do it, and then they said they can't do it, and so their rights have been violated.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, companies mm-hmm. can change policy.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as if people don't want to get it. It's all, and I said, look, you may want this to be their right.
Mm-hmm.
You may wish it to be, if it was your country, a First Amendment right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not.
No.
But for, you know, and so when I see what people assume, you know, are rights, and you, I think, have always said, if medical care is a right, then water and food have to be a right.
Yeah. For everyone, by the way. Not just for those who can't afford it. It has to be for everyone. If you're saying that is a basic right, well, before you start with medical care, it has to get down to food.
It has to be water.
Yeah.
Food before even medical care, because most people don't get sick.
Right.
So if health care is a right, then mm-hmm. food has to be a right.
It's always
water
been my
has
point.
To be a right.
You know,
housing has to be a right.
Right. Shelter. Right.
Shelter.
Clothes.
Clothes have to be a right.
Mm-hmm. Transportation.
Transportation has to be a right.
Mm-hmm. Corvettes.
I'm trying to think of what have you. you can tell Eric and I, this is not a scripted bit as you hear our silence and our minds trying to work on what else could possibly be a right
I'm
here.
I'm going to throw in some things here.
Oh, smartphones.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, of course. Latest smartphone. I have a right to, you know, talk to other people.
For anybody under the age of 50.
Uh-huh.
Coffee is a right because Dr. Johnny Fever said it was on the old WKRP.
Yeah.
Coffee is a right. Well, at least coffee is a right for the DJs.
That's right. Especially morning DJs.
Not you.
Right. No. Normal. Not normal people.
No. But Starbucks does have the right to write on their cups to you.
Yes.
You may not want them to, but they had that right to do so.
Yes. Free speech. Yeah.
And so I did tell you that the best part of the conversation was I got the guy in every argument, and we tried to keep it cordial, but I got him in every argument. And finally he said, well, Kaepernick and Michael Bennett really weren't the leaders of this movement.
Well, of course they were. Who was?
And he said, in my opinion, I said, well, yeah, it's in your opinion. Your opinion is not reality. To say that, you know, because what I said was, you know, Kaepernick, of course, was the leader.
Mm-hmm.
The first year, but then he was gone. And then it was Michael Bennett after Michael Bennett came out screaming during right about this time last year that he was racially profiled by Las Vegas police in that case of the suspected active shooting situation at the casino.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the police, you know, that they chased him and it was all because of racial profiling and a big to-do about it, and he's going to be a kneeler. And he was the catalyst for the kneeling last year. And you found out about 3 weeks later when they came out with the video, he was a complete liar. He lied about everything. And I explained because, you know, I went through the whole thing yesterday. And I will admit, some people did say, you really know how to debate. I went, well, no, I just, you know, I do this all the time.
Well, you just find the truth.
Right,
it's not hard to go back to, you know, the core of it. But people don't want to know the truth; they really don't.
No. But it was the fact that he still kept going back. They want to believe, and think about this: this is over 2 years. This has gone on now.
Mm-hmm.
2 years the kneeling has been going on,
mm-hmm.
and we mentioned last month the players. It's our right. They're still stating it's their constitutional right.
Mm-hmm.
And those supporting it still are arguing 2 years later. I mean, how ignorant is the American public? How willfully ignorant is the American public to believe what they want to believe is the reality of something, even when it is not? Imagine thinking that. I can't imagine thinking that way, Eric. I'm going to believe this way no matter what. I don't care what you tell me. I don't care what reality tells me. I'm going to believe a fantasy. I'm going to believe that the Constitution, well, the Constitution doesn't. Well, yes, it does. No, it doesn't. Prove to me it doesn't. I'll read it to you. Here it is. Let's go through the precedent. The freedom of speech is not about your speech at work.
It's protection from the government, not protection from the NFL.
It's protection from the government limiting your free limiting your political free speech. Mm-hmm. Or punishing you for your political free speech.
Right. Yeah.
It has certainly got nothing to do with your company saying, by the way, the next 8 hours, you have to work and do this. And I want you to say this and I want you to say that to the customer because that's our policy. Well, no, I have my free speech rights and I can tell the customer whatever the heck I want to tell them.
Yeah.
Well, no, you can't. You have to tell them, how dare you tell me what I have to say? I have my free speech rights. I mean, that's how asinine and childish the argument has gotten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why all this talk radio stuff stinks now. That's why we hate it.
Yeah, we're leaving.
Really?
Wait, did I just hear applause by our audience?
Well,
dang it.
Look, it's a love-hate thing. You hate it, but then you love it. You hate it because you're disappointed that people are arguing that way, and then you realize, wait a minute, it's a great opening to explain how things really are. So
when people don't know the three branches of government.
I know. Yes.
You know, and then we brought you the stats, what was it, last week?
On freedom of speech.
On freedom of speech. On the First Amendment.
People don't know what it means.
Okay,
now
we get it. Now we get it. It's not that hard to learn. We just refuse to do that. That's being willfully ignorant.
Let me ask this question. How lazy and apathetic are we? Because I'm telling you, I really thought there was nobody as a child. My father told me all the time, there was nobody more lazy.
Mm-hmm.
And attempting to avoid work and a bigger BSer than his own son.
Mm-hmm. Your brother.
No, me.
Oh.
It was none. And so I understand, and I remember back to those days, how I wanted to avoid every single moment of work that I possibly could.
That's why I got into radio.
There is no one. In the history of the planet, at least in my generation, except for my brother, that hated homework more than I did. There is no one who thought school was a bigger waste of time than I did. There was nobody who would try to avoid work more than I did. And so I understand it. I still was inquisitive about how things worked. I still wanted to know when my father started talking about the Constitution or teachers started talking about the Constitution, how did it still run? You know, how did it really work? When my father started talking about cars and I got interested in cars, how does an engine actually work? I wanted to know. And so the things that I, what I found out is the things that I had interest in, I wanted to know, and a lot of it you needed critical thinking in order to understand. But the one thing I really did want to know, and maybe it was growing up during the Cold War, I don't know. Maybe that is a difference. Maybe when you are under the fear, maybe when you go to sleep, and many of you, if you're, you know, my age or Eric's age, you can remember, you know, if you're in your young 20s or upper 20s. No, if you're in your 50s or your 60s, you remember the Cold War, and so you remember. I remember going to sleep as a 7 or 8 year old. Now, this was after the Cuban Missile Crisis,
right?
So I would have been it was probably a couple years after that. So I probably was 7 or 8 years old, and I remember going to sleep at night as probably a 7 or 8 year old and thinking about the fact that the Soviet Union had the ability, you know, and the United States to wipe out everything. And you knew it. As a little kid, you went to sleep with that every night. Could you imagine now? Imagine now. What would the politically correct people? You can't have those thoughts in kids. Kids can't have those thoughts. We had those thoughts. The duck and cover.
Right.
All right. You need to prepare yourself. You need to prepare yourself from being incinerated. So get under your desk and duck and cover.
Right.
So you don't get incinerated by the atomic bomb, all you 8 year olds. But what was it? I mean, what was it that? And then I know when I went into Boy Scouts and everything else, then I started getting a lot of different interests and things like that. But the fact is, how lazy or apathetic do you have to be to not even understand the First Amendment to the Constitution?
Two words: Ocasio-Cortez.
I rest my case.
Because
if you
really do aspire to be a lawmaker, you would think, okay, these are the things that, because I'm not experienced, I'm really young, so now that I'm going to be in the spotlight, let me get just a handful of core principle things that I can talk about and answer questions on, and then walk around the other questions. No. You got the Google in your hand. You know how to Google. You just choose not to.
I know when I got the merit badge for citizenship of the nation in Boy Scouts, and I would have been 12 or 13 when I got that. I knew at that point the complete and total infrastructure of how the Constitution and government worked.
Right.
I knew about the separation of powers. You had to, otherwise you couldn't get the merit badge. Now, I know I knew it for that. I believe I knew it before, but that is the benchmark where I knew all of it by at least 12 years of age.
Right.
And the majority of Americans walk around and have no idea about the separation of powers and the executive branch, legislative, and judicial, and why they are the way that they are. That's amazing.
Yeah. And to the point that someone is running for office and doesn't really care to learn the answers.
Yeah.
Basic answers. I'm not saying become a constitutional expert tomorrow, but to learn the very basics very quickly before you go on even Trevor Noah, The Daily Show.
Chris Cuomo,
hate
speech.
Right.
He had no idea.
No. Or wants people to believe something that is not the case. So he's either ignorant or lying.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. What's the amount up to?
This would be the GoFundMe page.
The Peter Strzok GoFundMe
Peter
page.
Peter Strzok. Last I checked, it was over $300,000. Let's get that. I'm sorry, over $380,000. So we're at just over, still over that. 380. Let me refresh. Here we go. Ah, $381,000. Wow. 9,899 people have donated. There you go.
Unbelievable.
Because the goal now is a half a million.
Yeah, it started out 150,000.
Right. All right.
He's got to be sitting there saying, what a bunch of
suckers. Now he has to pay taxes on that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
This is not a non, he's not a nonprofit. And neither is his legal defense.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley in the news today. Hey, Eric.
Hmm?
Sup, dog?
I'm not sure it was really that context.
Oh. So that's a word that, depending on the context and the tone, can have completely different meanings, right?
Oh, yes.
Apparently.
Yes.
It can be insulting.
Right. It can be... factual, like I am taking my dog to the park.
It can be used, for example, sup dog.
Yeah.
You know, it could be used as like a cool...
If you're hip enough.
A cool thing.
You can get away with that.
It can have a very cute connotation if you put puppy in front of it.
What's up, puppy dog?
Yeah.
Wasn't that a Tom Jones song? Oh, no. Never mind.
Well, I think it would be a shorter list... if you could find the people that the president has not referred to as a dog.
Yeah.
Because the media was promoting that this is proof that the president is a racist until you go in to his use of the term dog,
right.
Which, by the way, is not a term except for maybe a minute and a half ago when I said sup dog to you that I don't believe I've ever used in my entire life.
I don't know.
In reference to any person, either in a cute way, a cordial way, a way of greeting, or a derogatory way.
Well, my brother-in-law went to a casino one time and he won like, you know, I don't know, a couple $1,000 or something. I said, man, you dog. You know, like that, right? That's another context.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Hmm?
I have it. I did have a friend.
Mm-hmm.
We called him Dr. Dog.
Dr. Dog?
Dr. Dog, yes.
Was he a DJ?
It was used in the term of doctor of golf.
Okay.
And then we called him a dog because he really wasn't, but the perception was...
He wasn't an actual canine, you're saying?
Used in the term dog as into you're a hound.
Right.
You know,
as in you ain't nothing but a...
The term that males, that you're a hound, for example, and that may be an 80s term because, remember, Sam Malone was called a hound. He was always going after the babes.
Right.
And so we called him Dr. Dog, Doctor of Golf, because he was
golf hound.
He was a good golfer and also gave lessons and things like that. And then we always were kidding him that he was a hound, that the women loved him, which, of course, was not the... So that would be the only time that I think I've ever used that.
Mm.
So it is one word that has about, I don't know, dozens of different meanings.
Right.
And dozens of different meanings depending on the context or the tone of how you use the word.
Yes. Which is ironic because my actual dog doesn't believe she is a dog. She thinks she's human. And I rarely use that word even about an actual canine.
And I swear my cat believes he's a dog.
See?
So you really can't. Look, the only thing I would get out of this is, and you and I talked about this earlier, and it does bother me about this administration and the president. And it goes back to what we talked about the last couple of weeks, that there's a ton of things that he should be promoting every single day going into the midterms that nobody else will. The media's not going to do it to him, but the media will pay attention to every word that he says. So make it the words that they don't wish to discuss, which is the success that you've had, the success that the Republicans have had. Every moment, because nobody else is going to do it for you, you should be promoting the good things that you have done. I believe that it was the Wall Street Journal that made that, or maybe it was an op-ed piece, that went through all the good things that the president had done, that independents would love, which is expanding your base beyond your base, as he should be doing going into the midterm, to let a wide group of people besides just your base know, I'm delivering for you. Remember, during the campaign, it's okay. Why? You haven't accomplished anything. You're a candidate.
Yeah.
You're building around your base at that particular point to see how big you can get that base. The president was successful at doing it. Now, people want to know what you're doing. And so by getting down in the dirt to argue and throw back insults back and forth with somebody as minor as Omarosa was in your campaign and in your administration is taking away valuable time from promoting what your agenda has done for America. And in August, before a midterm, you should be doing that 24/7, every minute, every hour. There should not be a wasted sentence.
And there's a lot to promote.
There's a ton to promote. As we went through the list probably about 10 days ago, the list of what the president has just accomplished in the last 2 months. And every time he puts out a tweet like that, then the media is obsessed with it instead of the media being forced by the dialogue of the president to either just ignore him, which they can't, or challenge him. And that's what I would want as president of the United States, doing the things that he has done. If they're going to fact check you on the things that you have done, let him do it.
Yeah, right.
Go ahead. Let him do it. But the president does this. It to me, and this is what is infuriating to me, the president at times seems to want to win the little stinking battles that don't matter when you've got a war going out there and you've got, to use the war analogies, you've got tons of positive ammunition to use to win that war. And you just refuse to use it because you're obsessed with anybody who says anything negative against you, irrespective of their importance to the country, to your camp, you know, to your administration, to your goals. You just feel the need to do it. Might have worked in the campaign. It's not going to work as well when you are the incumbent and you are viewed as a leader and you are the person that people look to solve problems, and you're solving problems and the word doesn't get out because you are the one that is responsible for promoting it, because the media isn't going to do it. They're not going to do it like they would for a Democrat president. So you have to do it on your own. And every time you take away from it, when I saw the tweet yesterday, I said, rest of the week's done. It's done. Rest of the week's gone.
Can you imagine how successful it would be and the momentum there would be going into this, you know, what we're in now, the midterm season, if it were that? Because we talked years ago about if you were to do a TV ad, right? But I mean, collectively, the Republican Party promoting the positive things that they want to do, try and accomplish, right? So expanding oil drilling, the whatever it might be, and how that expands economies on not just the local level, but in regions and in states. And how easy that is to do, where you're promoting that forward momentum. And look at the things you've accomplished. As a president, it's a whole number of things. And by the numbers, let the media try and take it apart.
You know, we said this about Alex Jones a couple of weeks ago, where we said, thank you, Facebook.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying. Thank you. You've just made my point. See? They all are against me.
Exactly.
And Catherine Timp, the National Review, Trump might as well be paying Omarosa again. In case you haven't noticed, President Donald Trump and his former employee, Omarosa Newman, are engaged in a very public battle with each other. The feud is dominating cable news stations and social media. It's everywhere. And it's exactly what Omarosa wants. She's trying to sell books. Mm-hmm. See? Omarosa is one of these people who is famous for being famous. Actually, it would be more accurate to say she's famous for being infamous. She achieved celebrity after appearing on season one of The Apprentice, not because she was particularly lovable or warm or cuddly, but because she was so crafty and conniving. People didn't love her. They loved to hate her. She has had a reality television career, not in spite of the fact that people think she's awful, but because people think she's awful. This is one of the reasons why it makes so little sense for Trump to try to ruin her with insults. Even if his brutal tweets about her somehow accomplish what he wanted them to accomplish, presumably to make other people think that she's a bad person or to take his side in the fight, it wouldn't matter. After all, being painted as a villain has never hurt this woman. Quite the opposite. It gave her her career. When you're famous for being famous, it really doesn't matter why you get attention. It only matters that you get it. Even worse for Trump, people don't seem to be taking his side in the dispute. His decision to call her that dog in particular has elicited massive outrage on her behalf. Thanks to the president's own words, the notoriously hated Omarosa is now able to play the victim, something that would never have been possible otherwise.
Yeah, and that's it. Especially when, she said the other day, I expect retaliation. Well, don't afford that. It doesn't happen. There are bigger things on your plate, frankly. Unless you make this your plate.
And this week he's made it his plate.
Yep.
And you're not a candidate anymore. You are the incumbent. You lead your party. You have substance to back what you have done as president. Promote it. Let the nothing burgers like Omarosa stay nothing burgers.
Mm-hmm. Let it be done.
Let it be done. And the president just can't do that.
Well, because he's also adding legitimacy to it along the way. Because her credibility has failed with the liberal media. She's losing credibility.
She has no credibility.
So you're handing her that credibility because now it's the big bad government, the president, the most powerful man in the world, going after her. No. No need. There's absolutely zero need to respond to any of that or any question about the book.
Right. Shouldn't have even mentioned it. Let Huckabee Sanders take any of the questions.
Mm-hmm.
Your underlings can defend you on it. You stay above this fray. You worry about winning the midterms. You worry about winning 2020. You worry about doing the work that you constantly tell the American people that you're doing. But once the work gets done, you're not out there promoting it 24/7.
Right.
You've got to be your own bullhorn because nobody else is going to do it for you. The media is not going to do anything you do good. They're not going to promote. You have no choice but to do it for yourself. And when you lower yourself to the level of an Omarosa, well, then that becomes a news item an entire week. And you're a part of that fray back and forth. It dominates it. And another week is blown promoting the good things that you have done. And you have done also with your executive orders and also what you have done when it comes to the cooperation of Congress and what you plan to still continue to do of substance for the American people. Because really, I don't care about the back and forth between the president and Omarosa, and I don't think most people in America care either. Don't make anyone care, because when you sink to that level, you tell the American people this is important to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not important. It's nothing. She's nothing when it comes to the direction and the positive direction of where this country is going. Don't make her something.
You're helping her sell books.
Yep. That's all you're doing. 866-90-RED-EYE.
No real relief in sight for the wildfire-plagued West, according to USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey, and the latest look at weather in the region.
We're going to be dealing with continued elevated temperatures and little, if any, rainfall across the Pacific Coast states and the Great Basin, and that may extend into parts of the Northwest, the Northern Rockies as well.
The latest National Interagency Fire Center wildfire count as of Tuesday is 115 wildfires of 100 acres or more in the continental U.S. and Alaska, most of those concentrated in California and the Pacific Northwest.
At this time, we have four fires that are approaching or in excess of 100,000 acres.
Including California's Carr Fire at Mendocino Complex. And Rippey adds, factor in the continued hot, dry weather pattern for the Pacific Coast states.
And the wildfire situation, which is already quite tenuous across much of the West, could actually get worse before it gets better.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. The other news out there, when you think about it, talking about what could have possibly affect the election, and something the Republicans and the president might have wanted to use this week instead of going back and forth with Omarosa, is that the DNC is now reviewing domestic abuse allegations against Minnesota Representative and Deputy DNC Chairman Keith Ellison. After more than 72 hours of silence, the DNC weighed in last night on domestic allegations against Deputy Chairman and Minnesota Representative Keith Ellison. These allegations recently came to light, and we are reviewing them. All allegations of domestic dispute are disturbing and should be taken seriously, the DNC said in a statement to National Public Radio. The DNC statement did not go far enough, according to former DNC Communications Director Luis Miranda. Quote, the party has no choice but to suspend him at a minimum until they figure out what's going on, Miranda told NPR. Frankly, it would be malpractice not to. We've made it clear we're going to take these actions seriously at a minimum. We set too high a standard not to take this seriously. The NPR story went live just hours before the polls closed in the Minnesota primaries, where Ellison won the Democratic nomination easily for attorney general. But this is from the Daily Caller. Ellison's ex-girlfriend, Sierra Club activist Karen Monahan, has accused him of physically and verbally abusing her during their relationship. That was first came to light because her son put in a viral Facebook post about what he knew about it a couple of days before. The Sierra Club also has come out and demanded that Ellison answer these allegations, and has other liberal groups now.
Yeah.
So this is starting to...
Well, as the pressure mounts, it could be at some point inevitable, I guess, that the DNC parts ways with Ellison. It's again, not just about right. his run for the AG's office in Minnesota, but, of course, being the second in command at the DNC.
Mm-hmm.
For Omnitrax, here's your forecast.
It's been a dangerous situation overnight in areas of Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania, where flash flooding warnings and watches have gone out through the evening. 200 homes damaged in New Jersey. The city of New York was under a flood watch for a time. Floods on the East Coast continue to put many lives in danger because now we have rising creeks and streams. Now, we'll get a break in the rain for the region today, but I do see more rain in the forecast for Friday and Saturday. Overnight, we saw heavy amounts of rain in New Jersey. And again, the big problem now, even though the rains have subsided, are these creeks, rivers, and streams will be rising throughout the day. So if you have friends, family, interests in the area, or will be traveling to the Northeast, especially on some of the back and state roads, you may just in fact find some road closures. With a focus on the Northeast, your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Tough guys, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, with the firing of Peter Strzok this week, it's a good time to just be able to encapsulate everything that has happened the last year and a half. And who can do it better than anybody else? Molly Hemingway. And she had a column in the Federalist. Media conspiracy theories about Devin Nunes are getting out of control. This is all because of the secret audio, supposedly the secret audio that, you know, that where which really was nothing, where he was, you know, talking to donors, where he said that Democrats want to impeach President Trump and that he would impeach Rod, you know, Rosenstein. But the fact is that the politics isn't right to do it right now. And you better win, otherwise this thing's going to be thrown under the rug.
Right.
And you talked about MSNBC and Rachel Maddow. Oh, can you believe? Well, no, duh. And she points out why it's a duh. Mm. And this is just a couple of paragraphs long, but it's very concise. But I don't think the majority... Look, if the majority of Americans don't even know the... If the majority of Americans don't even understand the First Amendment, the majority of Americans don't even understand what's gone on here in this whole...
Yeah. Right.
Last year and a half. And so if you don't, listen for just a minute here and you'll learn something. During the 2016 presidential campaign, Hillary Clinton and the Democratic National Committee secretly bought and paid for information, campaign alleging treasonous collusion between Donald Trump and Russia to steal an election belonging to Clinton. I'll say it one more time. During the 2016 presidential campaign, Hillary Clinton and the Democratic National Committee secretly bought and paid for an information campaign alleging treasonous collusion between Donald Trump and Russia to steal an election belonging to Clinton. The campaign was run by Fusion GPS, which specializes in spreading information into the media. Fusion GPS principal Glenn Simpson and British ex-spy for hire Christopher Steele secretly met with media companies during the campaign and after the election to spread their dramatic tales claiming that the Trump campaign affiliates were working hand-in-hand with Russian operatives and that the Russians had compromising information on President Trump. They also got the information, which they claim came from Kremlin operatives and other Russians with ties to Vladimir Putin, into the U.S. government to secure widespread spying on the Trump campaign. Literally nothing of significance alleged in the information campaign has proven to be true. Yes, Russia is a country with Putin as a leader. And yes, Carter Page visited Russia. But 2 years into the most thoroughly investigated issues of our time, no evidence has been provided to come even remotely close to proving that Carter Page was a mastermind spy who secretly coordinated with Russian officials to bring down America's next president. Or that Michael Cohen, the president's attorney, went to Prague to make arrangements with the Russian officials. Despite the dramatic claims of Paul Manafort's involvement in this Russian plot, special counsel Robert Mueller has told the court that nothing in Manafort's money laundering trial will touch on this claim. Still, the weaponized information campaign was so successful that it spawned widespread spying on the Trump campaign, followed up by a special counsel investigation without limits. At best, the media fell for the information campaign, hook, line, and sinker. At worst, they were complicit in spreading information they knew to be false. Rather than admitting any gullibility or error, many media figures are absolutely desperate to save face. The only way this country knows that the Russia conspiracy theory was a Clinton campaign operation that was weaponized and subsidized by the country's law enforcement and intelligence agencies is thanks to congressional oversight. Two committees in particular have done actual work to uncover facts in the face of media misinformation. The Senate Judiciary Committee, chaired by Senator Chuck Grassley, and the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, chaired by Representative Devin Nunes, who has taken the most heat for doing congressional oversight rather than congressional complacency. And there it is, really wrapped up right there. But you can really not even read the whole thing. You can just go to the first sentence. During the 2016 presidential campaign, Hillary Clinton and the Democratic National Committee secretly bought and paid for an information campaign alleging treasonous collusion between Donald Trump and Russia to steal an election belonging to Clinton. And the information was false.
And yet here we are with this whole thing still going on. And Mueller still in place, still investigating what? The things that we have documented. The very real things. Nothing being done, as far as we know, about any of that. And the one thing that hasn't leaked out of all of this was somebody identifying a crime. Here's how it happened. Here's the crime that took place in relation to the election.
Well, they can't even tell you where the collusion was.
No.
Even before a crime, they've never identified what the collusion was. We can identify the specific allegations and evidence that exist of collusion between the Democratic National Committee, the Hillary Clinton campaign, and the Russians.
The closest they get to the whole collusion thing was the meeting between the Russian lawyer, Veselnitskaya, and Donald Trump Jr. And what did they get out of that? He thought he was going to get dirt on Hillary.
What did I get out of it? The fact that you can pronounce her name.
Oh, thank you. And the whole thing is that we have proof. No one is even denying the DNC and the Hillary campaign paying to get dirt on Trump.
From the Russians.
Then they act shocked that Donald Trump Jr. was told that there's going to be dirt on Hillary. If you go to this meeting, you're going to get dirt on Hillary. How dare he want to get dirt on Hillary?
If you're outraged by that, if you are consistent in your thought process, which of course they are not, but if you have any semblance of integrity and credibility, you must be outraged by what the DNC and the Hillary campaign paid for.
Right.
And how it went up all the way and how it was weaponized and used the incorrect, salacious information that you received from Russians with ties to Putin. That's the most incredible thing. And that's what we've said. You know, that's one thing that nobody hasn't brought up that much. A few people have. But when they when people were talking about the fact, they did tell the FISA judge that it you know that the information in the dossier came from people trying to find information on Trump. No, but they didn't say it was a Hillary Clinton campaign in the DNC. And the reason is they couldn't, because the FISA judge would be sitting there and he'd be saying, "Okay, hi, I'm the FISA judge," and they'd be saying, "Hi, you know, we're the FBI. I'm James Comey. I'm Peter Strzok, and look, we believe that the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians to hack the election or change the outcome of the election." Well, how do you know this? Well, we know this from this information right here. And where'd you get this information from? We got it from a former British spy who was paid by the Clinton administration and the DNC, and he got it from Russians close to Putin. Wait a minute. You're telling me Trump colluded with the Russians? You just laid out how the Democrats and Hillary colluded with the Russians to change the outcome of the election by getting dirt from the Russians close to Putin on. So you guys, they've been colluding with. Didn't you figure that out? Comey, Strzok, what are you people, idiots? You're talking about collusion with the Trump administration. You just lined out that the information you got was the Democrats colluding with the Russians and paying to get the information from the Russians.
Yes.
So the only people I can see that colluded with the Russians right here, that nobody is debating in this group of people right here. I'm the FISA judge and you're Comey and you're Strzok or whoever it was from the Department of Justice. The only evidence, and you presented it to me, and nobody is debating it. The only collusion was the DNC, Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
That's it. And the Russians.
Right.
Next.
And
tell and I've I,
and
we've
yet
said,
nothing.
As you said from the very beginning, please, someone tell me where I'm wrong on that one. If anybody, and nobody's ever had, and we say, state that every time after we go through that scenario of the FISA warrant.
Well, where's the equal weight by the media? You're not going to get it. And Comey knew this. This is why Comey went to his friend, his professor friend, to make sure that it got out to the media. That's why Evelyn Farkas was talking the way she was talking.
But can you
think, we got to get this to our friends on the Hill before everyone tries to squash this.
Can you think of any scandal in American history where the allegation of wrongdoing, I mean, this is almost like in Watergate.
Mm-hmm.
If we found out that the break-in to Democratic National Headquarters was actually paid for by the Democrats in order to set up Nixon.
Right. Exactly.
That's what it would, that's what it
would
be like.
What you're looking
because,
at here.
Because
yes.
the allegations of Trump, the fury still of Trump. And remember, you've got outside the what, as it's still going on, it was going on for 22, 23 days, the protests that Trump was colluding with the Russians, that the White House is a Russian annex, that he is treasonous. And what has come out of the investigation into whether Donald Trump colluded with the Russians was that Hillary Clinton and the Democrats colluded with the Russians. The exact opposite of what we were told. And that isn't the biggest news of all scandal political history of all time.
Yep.
Because it's the exact same. It would be the exact same. Well, not the exact same. But the analogy we can make is when the Republican operatives broke into the Democratic headquarters at Watergate. And, you know, and so they, and Forrest Gump was also there. Remember, he was looking.
Yes, he was everywhere.
But if they broke in and you found out afterwards that it was actually not a Republican operation that then the president found out about afterwards, but it was actually a Democrat operation to break into the Democratic headquarters in order to frame Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it would be like. Now, Nixon, and that was a scandal to begin with, considered one of the biggest political scandals. Could you imagine if it went a step further and you found out it was actually a Democratic operation to frame Nixon and to frame the Republican Party? That's what this actually is.
Yep.
This should be the biggest political scandal story of all time. And the media ignores it as if it doesn't exist.
And then screams with outrage about a meeting between Donald Trump Jr.
Right.
and a Russian lawyer because Donald Trump Jr. thought he was going to get dirt on Hillary Clinton, which he didn't get, and wouldn't wasn't willing to pay for. Well, we know that not only were they willing to pay for, they did at the DNC in the Hillary campaign.
They did pay for it.
And they did get dirt. Now, it wasn't real dirt.
No.
But they did it.
And nobody is debating the facts of it either. No one.
Ignore it, and it will go away somehow.
That's the world that we live in. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Is your engine prepared for hot summer months? As the temperature rises, so does the importance of preventative maintenance and inspections. Avoid losing your cool and stay on the road longer with a simple pressure test of your engine's cooling system radiator cap. Radiator caps are one of the most commonly overlooked parts of a vehicle's cooling system. They maintain enough cooling system pressure to allow the coolant to absorb more heat from your engine. Poorly maintained radiator caps can result in an overheated engine, especially during intense summer temperatures. Stay cool and keep rolling with an easy pre-trip inspection of your cooling system.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. So the defense rested yesterday in the Paul Manafort trial. I know that part of what the defense is going to try to do is state that, look, all these people that you claimed had stuff against Trump never testified. You never used them as witnesses.
Right.
Why not?
Yeah.
I think, though, that the tax evasion is the hardest hill for him to climb.
Well, and that's the whole point is that it's going to be really hard for them to convince a jury to decide something based on what they didn't see. When the instructions will be very clear from the judge, you go by the evidence and, you know, you consider it on pretty much every level. But it definitely is headed to the jury. Question is, how long will the deliberation take?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.